You're listening to The Parting Shot with H. Allen Scott.
So I usually reserve Friday episodes for more casual chats, often with friends of mine, but I just spoke with Jodie Foster and, well, I had to share it with you. And considering that this is my second time that we've spoke, we're basically best friends anyway, right? I mean, that's how it works. Maybe just in my head, I don't know. Now, I'm not sure you're aware of this, but we are in the midst of a Jodie Foster renaissance. Yep, it's true. Not only did she pick up her fifth Oscar nomination for her work in Netflix's Naiad, but she's also in the hottest limited series on TV right now, True Detective Night Country. And if you're not watching True Detective, I don't know what you're doing because I'm obsessed. I don't like, what are you watching on TV if not this True Detective? I don't get it. The long-running anthology series took a long break before returning with the new season starring Jodie Foster as Liz Danvers, a detective in remote and cold Ennis, Alaska, investigating the strange disappearance of men from a research facility who appear to have gone missing without a trace. It's part gritty true crime drama and part X-Files. It's so interesting and weird and different and good, and it's just, wow, it's just so good. But for me, what's most wonderful about it is that it brings Jodie Foster to my TV screen every single week. You see, Foster is one of those creatives who doesn't feel the need to constantly come out with something new. Instead, she waits for the right thing to come along. If she's not acting, she's directing. And if she's not doing that, well, she's just living her best life, often with her BFF, Jamie Lee Curtis. But at least for now, we get Foster on our TVs and at this year's Oscars. She was last nominated for an Oscar 30 years ago with Nell. But before that, she won two Oscars with The Accused and then the other one for Silence of the Lambs. And her first nomination was when she was just a kid in 1976 for Taxi Driver. So when I asked her about what she thought of being nominated this year, her response is unlike what you'll hear from any other Oscar nominee. And that's because Jodie Foster knows what every aspect of this industry is about, of the entertainment industry. She knows how this works, and frankly, she just seems grateful to be a part of the community. For me, I'm a longtime fan of Foster. Ever since I was a kid, I've been obsessed with her, first as an actor, and then as a director. But now that I'm older and I work in and report on the entertainment industry, my respect for her is more nuanced. I understand how she navigates what she does, and why she's quite literally in a league of her own. So, let's get to it. Grab a snack because I'll be right back with Jodie Foster.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hi there.
Hi. How are you?
Very good.
It's so nice to see you again.
You too. Yeah. You too. Wait, what time is it there? Oh, are you in LA or?
I'm in LA. It's 8:30, okay. 8:30 a.m.
Oh my gosh, so early.
I mean, if it's Jodie Foster, I will get up early. Let's be real. I have to start with, though, we are in a bit of like a Jodie renaissance, if you will. I mean, boy. There is so much. And frankly, as a longtime fan, I am very excited about this moment for you. Do you feel this sort of like renewed interest in you and your work?
Well, I think it's just because I did two movies back to back, really. Mm-hmm. I guess I do kind of, but it kind of scares me. And the chances are I probably won't work again for another 4 years, or maybe I'll go behind the camera again. I like to, you know, I respond to a piece of material and I love it and I'm obsessed with it. And then I have to look for my next obsession and I may not find that for another 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. But I mean, I love that you take the time for the right thing to come. You know what I mean? Like, for it's just even this with this project. I mean, you haven't done an on-camera television acting role since 1984. I looked it up last night and I was blown away by that.
Wow, 1984. I don't even know what I did in 1984. Was it Blood
of, no, it was The Blood of Others, a TV movie.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Yes, it was a TV movie. It was a, no, it actually, yes, it was a TV movie, right?
So that's wild. Right. I mean, 40 years, like 40 years since you've done anything on television. What, like, well, first off, how's your return to TV going? Are you enjoying the experience?
Well, it's a new TV, as they say.
Yeah.
You know, it's a new world, and it's really the golden, you know, the golden moment of streaming. So I feel very lucky to explore things for 6 hours or 8 hours. I mean, that's just a gift.
Yeah.
To be able to play with a character like this for that long a period of time. Mm-hmm. Look, I love movies that are an hour and a half long. You know, I love that because I think that's short story form. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And there's something really perfect about that. But it's a different kind of storytelling.
Yeah.
And I will always love that, you know, hour and 45 minute storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah, true. But with this show, I mean, one of the things I'm thinking, I'm in watching it, we've never been able to spend this much time with you with a character. And also to see the moments in which oftentimes get left out of movies because you don't have enough time to really show the things in this series. I mean, people are responding to it in a way that I'm just so excited about. What do you think it is about this season of True Detective that people are responding to?
Oh, well, I think it's probably the same thing that I responded to in terms of the script, which is it's a genre show in some ways, right? Because it does live in the sort of horror, spiritual science fiction genre, thriller genre, darkness. But then it's really entertaining.
Yeah.
And it sort of has both things, this depth of character, this darkness and depth of character, this complexity, but then also really entertaining. And I really kind of insist on that in the films that I do. I don't want to make, you know, long, esoteric, boring movies that only some film person wants to see. And I also don't want to make junk.
Yeah.
I want to make, you know, that sweet spot between the two where you make something that has so much resonance and that keep people thinking and feeling for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. But that also they really enjoy going to and talking about. And, you know, that's why I saw films.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you do that so well too, because that, even just thinking about that, like thinking back on your films, the amount of times I quote, like, they should have sent a poet or like something from Panic Room or like little things. And it's like, sure, it's a great movie. It's a cinematic, beautifully well done movie. But at the same time, it's a movie too. And you do that with a lot of your work where it is this balance of sort of high art, but also real classic Hollywood entertainment at the same time. And I think we kind of need that balance of the two.
Yeah. And, you know, people talk a little bit about, you know, well, why is that not happening in the feature realm, right? Mm-hmm. Right now, the only mainstream distributors are really only making amusement park rides, really.
Yeah.
They're just making big, giant, epic things where you sit in the movie theater and for $50, which is a lot, you know, you kind of get this like intravenous thrill experience. Mm-hmm. And that's great.
Yeah.
But that's not the only thing. And unfortunately, that's not what the mainstream distributors have abandoned a narrative. They've abandoned storytelling. And so now we have that on streaming and we have it for these wonderful limited series and these wonderful long episodic things. And now people are finally discovering that they can see their films that way, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And this character, too. I mean, I have seen probably everything you've done, with the exception of The Blood of Others. I didn't see that TV movie because I think I was too young for that one. But I've seen most everything you've done. And this character is unlike anything I've seen you do. It's dark and human. And but there's something different about her.
She's awful. You know, she is unconscious and she's shitty and she's racist. Without even realizing it. She thinks her jokes are funny and they're not. But I think that what people respond to is that there's a real truth in her.
Yeah.
And that whatever this bad attitude is that she has, this corruption in some ways that she has, that it comes from a veil, a mask, as she's covering over a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
And That you know, that was my job, was to kind of maintain that, so that by the time you get to episode 5 and 6, or certainly 6,
yeah,
that you finally do understand why she has these coverings. You don't hate her so much, you know, that you've just given up on her before you get there.
Yeah. That, well, there's also, I mean, it's so interesting you brought up episode 5, because there, I'm not going to say anything for any spoilers, but there is a moment in episode 5 where something shocking happens. And, well, it's the big moment between the father and the son. Yeah, all those things. Not giving anything away. But, and it is wild to me how you, I mean, I've seen you cry a lot over the years. But in that moment, this character does not cry. And the tears will not fall from her eyes. But yet you see them welling up. How do you do that? I don't know how you physically do that as an actor.
You know, I don't know how actors do anything. I'm always in awe of them. I'm just like, oh, wow, I could never do that. Isn't that amazing? I could never do that. I'm always just like in awe, because you're just watching people living, you know, you're just watching people being. And if there's anything, I suppose that's my ambition, is to just be and live and to have audiences witness that.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I have plans, sure. I'm like, I'm going to walk here and I'm going to turn around there and I'm going to, you know, but I don't have plans about the feelings that I'm going to express. It's really just what happens in the moment. And, you know, that's the funny thing about acting. It's like, it's a skillless skill. And I don't have a skill, but apparently I do, because not everybody can do it. Don't ask me why. And I think the only thing that it's about is just about connecting.
Yeah.
It's just about connecting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, That whole moment blew me away. Also, the tone of the show kind of blew me away, because, I mean, I'm a true crime fan. I love a crime film, a crime show. But like, going into this, I wasn't really expecting it to be as sort of like horror driven. And in an exciting way, it's kind of like, I thought of it as like a Law and Order in Alaska meets the X-Files. There's sort of like all of those combinations happening here. Did that excite you about this?
Yeah, it really did, because I'm always, I really appreciate, ever since Silence of the Lambs, I really appreciate that Jonathan Demme was able to make a real horror genre movie that really touched people in a very deep and complicated way. I mean, you really care for Clarice and you care for Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a real respect or weird kind of like connection, that intimacy that you have with Hannibal Lecter. And I think Issa really understood how powerful that is. And as she says, you know, True Detective, even season one, is the love child of both Seven and Silence of the Lambs. You know, they all kind of come from the same beast. They all learn from each other. And I hope that season 4 is able to do that, is to be the next installment of that.
Yeah.
And it's true. We do go in a direction that's slightly more horror related, maybe, or sci-fi related than the first True Detective. But that's what's beautiful about an anthology, is that it takes it in different directions. And if you're gonna have that sense of place, right? Alaska, it's dark, it's night, it's freezing, that primitive connection with nature. And you recognize that place is millions of years old and 80% of the population is Inuit, of Inupiaic origin, or, you know, whatever tribal origin. You can't not have the spiritual world like that. That's so much a part of their life, and especially how the dead are walking among them and inform them the generations of pain that native people in these remote areas have experienced, and the burden of colonialism. Like, the fact that that's the horror is fantastic. Right.
Yeah.
So, so you can't ignore that if you're going to go to Alaska. I suppose if you're going to go to like a mall in St. Louis, you could.
Well, that's my hometown.
But if you're going to go to Alaska, you can't ignore that side of it.
Yeah, I love that you just name dropped my hometown. That will excite me for
really?
The. Yeah, that's where I'm from, St. Louis, Missouri.
Maybe I had a psychic.
I hope so. Movie. I mean, you know, I watched a lot of your movies in St. Louis, Missouri. I have a lot of memories of that. So there you go. There you go. I have to say, though, too, like, I have later on a question about Home for the Holidays, but you are such a great director. And when you're looking at a script, for example, before you even do it, like True Detective, I mean, I would imagine, I almost think you probably lead as a director before an actor. Like, do you read a project like that and think, oh, I wish I could have directed this, or I wish I could direct this? Like, how do you choose that? And how do you get jealous if you can't do something like that?
Well, there are some extraordinary movies that I'm completely jealous that I didn't direct, that are in my, you know, that are in my genre or in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
But of course, if I had made them, they would be totally different. Yeah. So, you know, but there are films that I love so much and that I respect so much. And, you know, I wish that I had directed them. But I don't think, I mean, it's really easy for me because something like True Detective is not something that I would direct. It's really, I want somebody like Issa to direct it, or Jonathan Demme, or David Fincher. So I want to serve them. And there's something, there's something really beautiful that actors are able to do. And even directors in television are able to do is identify a vision for a film and say, how can I serve you? Let me serve you. Let me bring whatever experience I have or wisdom I have to the table. But I want to tell your story. I want to help you tell your story. Mm-hmm. And that's really satisfying.
That's great. I mean, I have to also congratulate you on your Oscar nomination for NIAD. I have to ask you about NIAD because I just recently spoke with Annette Bening, and I told her how angry us as, or myself as homosexuals and all of my homosexual friends are angry that she's never won an Oscar, and how that's and how that's shocking. And her response was incredible. She told me to stay mad about it, which I loved. but I love you two together, and I love and this film. It spoke about, you know, chosen family and unique family structures and how these two women who are a family were able to accomplish this kind of thing in a queer way, but also in a very human way. And it just, I loved it so, so much. I mean, it's been a long time since you, I think there's a few films you should have been nominated for an Oscar for over the years. I'm just saying Inside Man is one of them. But how do you feel about getting this kind of acclaim right now for a film, and particularly this film?
For NIAID?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, it always feels like bingo. It always feels like, oh, I have cherries. You know, it doesn't really, it's hard to connect that up with your performance because it just feels lucky. Mm-hmm. So I just take it as luck. And it's sort of like a Mr. Toad's Wild Ride adventure that you're doing at Disneyland. Yeah. Because with the Oscar nomination comes all this stuff and you meet all these people and you kind of have this adventure and you're on this ride.
Yeah.
And you realize that you're a part of a community, you know, because I forget sometimes that I'm a part of a filmmaking community. And it's nice. It's nice to be like, oh, well, that's right. I do belong to the, you know, to the actors community.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mostly I just love Bonnie and Diana. So that was my first impulse for making the film is I just love them. I knew them socially a little bit. And I was like, this is something people should know about that they don't know about that. Women of a certain age, you know, in some ways, they're kind of like my mom's generation. Mm-hmm. Like they had to choose between living an authentic life and their families.
Yeah.
And so they lived an authentic life and they had chosen families that sometimes are ex-lovers most of the time, because those are the people that knew them and that they trusted and that they wanted to be the last person that they saw when they died.
Yeah.
And that's a really sacred thing. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people didn't really know that, you know, or they didn't think about it or something, but they can relate to it. I don't know if you saw All of Us Strangers, also another movie that I just love.
Incredible film.
And it's so heartening for me that so many people that I know from every walk of life, from young people to old people to married people, are all like, that movie got me because I'm totally in that movie and I totally relate to it. And yet it is so much about the queer experience.
Yeah. And stories that just aren't often told either, even on television or film, in terms of, you know, we usually see couples happy and they say a lot of times they're queer couples and they're happy or they're divorcing or whatever it is. And in this one, it was like, they're a couple, but they're not a couple, but they're friends and they're family, but they're not. And I relate to it so much as a queer person, but I find a lot of straight people are like, oh, that's why didn't they fall in love? What's happening there?
Yeah.
You know, it's a really interesting response. And I love that you and Annette are putting that out into the world and the story is being put out into the world so that people can experience that.
Yeah. Yeah. Friends, you know, there's always that expression there. Oh, we're just friends, or that's just friends. You're like, just?
Yeah.
That's a big thing to be a friend. I have, you know, one of my oldest friend, Marco. Mm-hmm. I mean, we knew each other from the time we were 17 in college and we've been best friends ever since.
Yeah.
And yeah, when something happens to me, like when he got in a bicycle accident in New York City, like he called me from the ambulance, you know, and when the second my mom died, like he's the first person I called and we will always be each other's first person.
Yeah.
And that's impossible to describe to people. that 40 plus year friendship and where the place it takes in your life.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, another friend that I have to talk about, one of the things that thrills me so much in the past few months, I've been able to talk to both you and another one of my favorites and your good friend, Jamie Lee Curtis. And I love, I love, and she is one of the craziest, wonderful people I think I've ever been able to connect with and now be able to text with, which blows me away. And I love the success that she had over the, this past year, winning the Oscar and everything. And then you this year getting nominated for an Oscar and her being, you two being at the Oscars together, her as a presenter, you as a nominee. That friendship, like, what, well, first off, speaking of friendship, I mean, what is that friendship? But also, how do you feel about her success this past year? I think it's so long overdue.
Yeah, well, and you've got the Bear too, because that that episode she did of the Bear is just beyond, like, I've never seen a performance like that on TV. When I saw it, I just couldn't believe how amazing and how great she was. So we have that to look forward to as well. And I hope that I'll be presenting her with that.
Right. You both will be at the Emmys together. Oh, that's so funny if that happens. Wow.
Yeah. You know, I don't have, I have almost no friends that are actors, like literally not a single friend. Maybe I have one or two, but really very, very few. I don't know. I just never, I don't know if I have the right personality or something, or I just never stayed friends with actors, but I stayed friends with a lot of technicians, but not actors. But Jamie's the one person, and it's mostly because we're like, there's six of us that are friends, so we're besties, and our children are all grown up.
Yeah.
So it's like we have this friendship that's like you have when you're 20, when you're like, we could go to Mexico City. Let's go to Mexico City, or you know, let's have dinner at 2:30 in the afternoon. You know, we do these things because we kind of can together, all six of us. So it's a very special group.
I love that. And I feel like people were so surprised that you and Jamie Lee Curtis were friends when that happened on the Today Show, where she asked you a question. I forget the scenario.
Oh, yeah.
And I just remember online, people were just going crazy about the two of you being friends. And I'm like, it makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah, she is really awesome. Well, I want to ask you, and I mentioned this before, but because I do love you so much as a director, but also Home for the Holidays is, I did a whole thing on it this past year about how people need to revisit this film. It is a Thanksgiving staple. It is a film that everyone should watch every year, and just that more people should be paying attention to it every year. And my mother got me out of school early, because that's how much of a fan I was of you. I got out of school early to see Home for the Holidays in its first showing at the Pear 14 Cinema Cine in St. Louis, Missouri. In St. Louis.
Oh, awesome.
I saw the 12:30 showing. And it was, I loved it. I became obsessed with Holly Hunter from it. And it was just, because I was such a fan of you, I was like, I need to understand this. And it got me into understanding great directors and sort of how all of that works. And you were mentioning earlier about the film industry kind of going in a different direction and becoming amusement park films and everything. And I think Home for the Holidays is such a testament of films that just can't get made anymore, it seems. They just, they don't happen. And it upsets me so much. So I wanted to know, what does that film mean to you? And more so, do you think that we'll ever be going in a direction where there'll be more films like that, more stories, family stories?
Yeah, we are at a weird moment, I think, at a transitional moment, right? As these two parts of the industry have kind of like separated the industry into big, giant, mainstream Hollywood distributed movies that are franchise films or Marvel movies, et cetera. And then the kind of like story and everything else, which is happening on streaming. And they kind of like got, you know, it's totally separated. But there will come a time, first of all, that the habits, the movie going habits have changed. People, especially the pandemic accelerated things. People just aren't going to movie theaters in the same way. They don't treat it the same way as they used to. And now they're looking for story. When they're looking for story, they're looking for story on their home screens. And I think what you'll find is eventually that will also be where our short story form, so beginning, a middle, and an end, an hour and 45 minute movies, that's where you'll watch your hour and 45 minute movies.
Interesting. Interesting. And also too, I mean, I have to ask you about one particular scene from Home for the Holidays. And that's my last question for you. And it haunts me to this day. Anne Bancroft changing in the mirror as Holly Hunter lays in the bed and she's smoking that cigarette with the ashes just flying everywhere. And she's reading that Dear Abby letter that, from the news. And it just, I think it's one of the best scenes in of any 90s film I've seen. I mean, it's just with Anne Bancroft, who's incredible. How did you shoot that? Like, what made you decide to shoot it in that way? Because it almost feels different from the rest of the film. You know what I mean? It feels like a different moment, a different feel to
it. There's a lot going on in that scene. If you remember, she has the flu.
Yeah.
So Holly Hunter has the flu. And she has that flu-y feeling, but she also gets high in the bathroom because she can't stand her parents 1 minute longer.
Yeah.
And so I think that was it, was like, okay, if you're high and you have the flu and your mother starts taking your clothes off in front of you and then starts telling you this story that even she doesn't realize is so sad about herself, you know, what does it feel like? There's also the reference of Anne Bancroft in The Graduate. Mm. Mm-hmm. So there is that moment where she undresses in front of him. And that's such a huge moment in the film that to see Anne Bancroft all these years later, you know, there was something sort of powerful about that reference. Mm-hmm. I guess that's what people feel like. There's this moment of her mom in this case, revealing herself so intimately and so totally, and then not even understanding that that's what she just did. So I wanted to truly make a comedy that was a full-on tragic drama.
Yeah.
And people don't make those very much anymore, but it's something that I really love.
It's one of my favorite films, and every single year I scream at people to watch it. I just scream at people to watch it. Well, Jodi, this has been such an honor and a pleasure to speak with you again.
Yeah, pleasure.
And I'm so excited for everything you're doing, and I hope to speak with you again in the future.
Great. I hope so too.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so here's what you need to do. Go to Max and watch True Detective Night Country. Then head over to Netflix and watch NIAID. If you're listening to this the day it dropped, you've got a long President's Day weekend ahead of you, so you have plenty of time to catch up on this Jodie Foster renaissance. Thanks for listening today. Go on and follow me at H. Allen Scott on everything. I want to know what you think of True Detective, of course, and NIAID and all of the things. And also sign up for my newsletter for the culture. Until next time, watch something fun and have a great day.